guy came into an inheritance of several million dollars. He'd always wanted a Ferrari Testarossa, red convertible. So he bought him one, cost him $500,000. He was about 30 years old, driving this Ferrari Testarossa down the streets of his hometown, stopping at every red light, making sure everybody could see him. Pulls up next to this 80-year-old guy on a moped. 80-year-old looks out over and says, "Sonny, that's some car you got there. What is that?" Young guy says, "It's a Ferrari Testarossa." Old guy says, "A Ferrari Testarossa? Never seen one of those, not in this town anyway." He said, "What's a vehicle like that cost you, if you don't mind me asking?" Young guy says, "No, I don't mind you asking at all. It cost me $500,000. Old guy said, "$500,000? Said, "There ain't no car in the world worth $500,000. Can I look in it?" And it was convertible, and the guy was on a moped. So young guy said, "Yeah, have at it." So the old guy leans over, looks all in it, sees all the bells and whistles. Says, "It is fancy, but it's just not worth $500,000. Young guy said, "This thing will go 0 to 250 miles an hour in 6 seconds. The old guy said, "No, I don't believe that for 1 second. Well, just then, the light turned green. And the young guy thinks, "I'm going to show this guy that this will go 0 to 250 in 6 seconds. White smokes him. I mean, just takes off as fast as he can. I was about 3 seconds into it. He's going about 150 miles an hour. He looks back and he sees something gaining on him. It's the guy on the moped. About 4 seconds into it, guy on the moped blows by him. Turns around, blows back by him. 6 seconds into it, he's going 250 miles an hour. He looks back and the guy on the moped's catching up on him with him again. Wham! Slams into his bumper. Young guy thinks, "I have just killed this old guy on this moped." He gets out, he goes around. Thankfully, the old guy's all right. He says, "Are you okay?" The old guy says, "Yeah, I'm all right." Young guy says, "Is there anything I can do for you?" Old guy says, "Yeah, there's one thing you can do for me. If you'll just unhook my suspenders from your rearview mirror, that will be helpful." I know it's bad, isn't it? Well, what I would like to suggest is that the dinosaurs have been hooked by the suspenders to evolution and need to be unhooked, because what we're going to find out is that dinosaurs in the past have had a very different and much more prominent purpose and place in the description and discussion of things than they do now, being used as icons for evolution. And I'm going to show you just what I mean by that. The question arises, could humans have lived with dinosaurs? Now here's the question. You're a mom, you got 3 kids, 9, 7, and 4, and they ask to go play outside, and you live in a neighborhood where there's a Tyrannosaurus Rex. What's the answer?
No.
Well, it depends on what day you ask the mom. But generally speaking, 6 out of 7 days of the week is going to be no. No. What are we thinking here? You got a brachiosaurus that lives in your neighborhood that steps on your car, you're going to have to get a new car. Or steps on your chariot or whatever it is you're riding around. Dinosaurs and humans just don't seem like they're going to mix really well. It looks like humans are going to have a problem living with dinosaurs. These statements are from a person that is a member of the church, but he says it's ludicrous to suggest that dinosaurs cohabited with man. Man could not have lived in a world with dinosaurs. You get the picture. And I think here's one reason why we come to this conclusion sometimes. And that's because every picture you've ever seen of dinosaurs, who else or what else is in the picture? Nothing. Dinosaurs, most all the time. In fact, we're told that dinosaurs ruled the earth and that they were the apex predator during the early Triassic period from 230 million years ago to 65 million years ago, and they were the biggest predator and nothing else lived with them. You ever seen a picture of a dinosaur alongside of a pride of lions? You haven't, most likely. You ever seen a picture of a dinosaur alongside of elephants? You ever seen a picture of a dinosaur alongside of a human? Most of the time, no. That's because the picture we're presented is that humans could not have lived with dinosaurs. Dinosaurs would have eaten them. They would have smushed them. They would have killed them. There's no way they could have lived with them. Now, one problem with this thinking is, what was the average size of a dinosaur? Well, the average size of your all your animals is about the size of a sheep together, put together. But the average size of a dinosaur is about the size of a rhinoceros. So you hear about the Argentinosaurus and the Tyrannosaurus Rex and the massive, big creatures. You don't hear much about the Coelophysis, do you? Oh, it's about a 6-pound little dinosaur. You don't hear much about the ones that are about the size of a chicken or the size of a dog. Were there lots of little bitty dinosaurs? Well, we would call them little bitty as far as the huge ones are concerned. Yeah, the average size was the size of rhinoceros. And when you start thinking about human interaction with animals, what's the largest land-living animal in the world today? Elephant, yeah. Can grow to be about 11 tons, about 22,000 pounds. If you were just to find the bones of an elephant, would you say that that elephant could crush a person? Would you say that the multiple hundred-pound tusk of ivory could gore a person to death? Would you say that if you just found the bones, you knew nothing else about elephants, that humans stood much of a chance against a creature like an elephant? Not much. And yet, what we know about elephants is that humans are very good at taming elephants. We have been for years. Hannibal tamed elephants and marched them across the hills to come and attack the legions of the Roman Empire. We've been taming elephants for years. We can train an elephant to stand on a tiny little stump or to raise its 300-pound trunk and let us wash under it. Now you say, all right, Kyle, yeah, well, that's the largest land-living animal we've got. What if there was one that weighed a ton more than that? You think we could do that to that animal? About 2 tons, 3 tons. You see what I'm saying there? The best example we got, the biggest land-living creature we have, not only can we live with it, but we can control it so that a 125-pound girl can ride one into an arena in the middle of Birmingham, Alabama, with thousands of screaming children all around the arena, and that elephant is so well trained that it doesn't go crazy and attack the kids. Now, isn't that something? Especially if you've seen this kid screaming. Well, you say, Kyle, yeah, but I mean, look at that. That's a plant-eating animal. Well, were lots of the dinosaurs plant-eating dinosaurs? Sure. Sure there were. But now watch this. Let's just say, all right, I understand what you're saying, plant-eating animal. What about this creature right here? Killer whale? I don't know if you've ever seen Shamu. San Antonio, Texas? Well, I hate to burst your bubble, but there are like 37 Shamus. They're like all named Shamu. I think we saw Shamu number 12. When I was about 12 years old, we were in San Antonio, Texas, and we went to SeaWorld, and we got to see Shamu. Now, my memory is a little bit fuzzy. I was 12 years old, and you know that was, well, 23 years ago. But here's what I remember happening. Shamu, the trainer called Shamu up on the little platform, did some kind of little signal, and Shamu opened its mouth. And the trainer stuck her head in the mouth of this killer whale. And the killer whale chomped down and bit the... Okay, no, I told you it was a little fuzzy. That is not what happened. In fact, that trick was not done, to my knowledge, at that particular episode. But have you seen on TV where a killer whale will open its mouth and let the trainer put its head in and take that its head out, her head or his head out, and the killer whale will not eat the trainer? Yeah, they do it all the time. And they get swapped for that, a tiny quarter-sized piece of a sardine. That seems like not too good of a deal to the killer whale, but you understand that a killer whale weighs as much as a pickup truck? 10,000 pounds, it's 10 feet long. It's a massive meat-eating machine. They eat 3,000 pounds of mammal meat every single year. Each one of them do. They have found moose in the stomach of a killer whale. They have found great white sharks in the stomach of a killer whale. They have found just about anything you can think of in the stomach of a killer whale. And yet, if you saw the bones of a 10-foot, 10,000-pound creature that had a mouthful of 30 razor-sharp, 3-inch teeth, and someone said, you know what, if that creature lived, I'd pay you $1 million to swim in the same pool as it. You taking that deal? Because this thing looks like it will kill you. And yet, not only will it not kill its trainer, most of the time, we have heard accidents where they do, but not only do they not most of the time, 99% of the time, but you can train one to hit a ball, take a trainer for a ride, let the audience hug it. What's the deal here? Well, what the deal is that there's something very different about humans than animals. And humans have always been in control of animals. Always. From the very beginning of human and animal interaction. Now let me tell you about this creature right here. My favorite animal in the whole wide world. Komodo dragon. Here's why this is my favorite animal in the whole wide world. It can eat 80% of its own body weight in 15 minutes. Now you wives might think that your husbands can do that sometimes. That's like a 100-pound man going to McDonald's and ordering 320 quarter-pound cheeseburgers and eating them all in 15 minutes. It's like a person going into the meal weighing 100 pounds, coming out of the meal weighing 180 pounds, and still being able to run relatively quickly. This creature's got razor-sharp teeth. It has a cell phone on it that rings periodically. No, I'm just kidding. That happens all the time. Razor-sharp teeth. It's got a bacteria in it that is fatal. It will run and chase a pig or a deer, bite it on the leg. Doesn't really matter if it hangs on to it very much because it lives on islands in Indonesia. When it bites it after about 3 days, the infection kills the animal, and it and its buddies have a great sense of smell. They smell the dead carcass of the animal, and they go and attack it, and in 15 minutes, they eat every bit of it, hoof, hair, and all. Now, I'm going to show you this right here. Hold on. That's not it. Do not try this at home. I mean, I'm telling you. It takes a brave individual, stout of heart, steely nerved, to stand by a bronze statue of a Komodo dragon. It does. I don't know if you could do it. But I could. That's it. It's just a bronze statue of a Komodo dragon. I really would not hold a Komodo dragon by the head by that, like that. Really, I was this close to a Komodo dragon. The thickness of the plexiglass that was separating me from the tongue of this little Komodo dragon that was licking this plexiglass. These creatures are amazing. They can weigh 200 pounds. They can run as fast as a horse can gallop for a short distance. They got poisonous bacteria in their mouth, and yet I can take my 7-year-old daughter to the Memphis Zoo and she can get within half an inch of it. How is that? Well, what we learn is that there's something very special about human interaction with animals. When I say very special, what I mean is humans have always been in charge of, been able to have dominion over, and been able to subdue every kind of creature. Let me tell you what I mean by every kind of creature. The largest animal that ever lived, you're looking at, ever. To our knowledge, we've never found a creature this big, ever. It's a blue whale. Biggest animal in existence. It has a heart the size of a Volkswagen Beetle. You can crawl through its aorta. You can put 50 grown adults on the tongue of a blue whale with a little bit of room to spare. And yet we got so good at killing blue whales with little more than wood and iron that we could go from a whaling village with no gunpowder, no electricity. We could get in a boat that we handcrafted out of wood and take an iron barbed staff and throw it with our hands into a blue whale so effectively that we had to outlaw it because we almost hunted them to extinction. You telling me that people that weigh, 10 guys that weigh 150 pounds apiece with a stick and an iron barb are so effective at killing blue whales, but that we couldn't have lived in a world where there were dinosaurs? Doesn't make a lot of sense, does it? In fact, what we have seen is that generally speaking, when humans move into a place, what do the animals do? They move out. You know, the reptile guy that came to your school in fourth grade that would stand up there with a big old anaconda that weighed, not the anaconda, but the python. The big reticulated python that was all 13 feet long, weighed 90 pounds. And he would say, "Now, this creature is more scared of you than you are of it." Well, by the reaction that I saw some of the girls give to that snake, that could not have been true. But what does happen when humans move in? Animals get killed or they move out. What's the number one extinction factor currently at play in our environment? Loss of habitat. Do people in Africa live with lions? Sure they do. Do lions kill people periodically? Yeah, but do people still control the lion population basically in the sense that they can keep lions out or that they can kill them more effectively than the lions can kill the people? Sure. Why is that? Because at the very beginning, Genesis 1, 26 and 28, God said, "I'm going to make man and they're going to have dominion over everything." Be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth, subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, the birds there, and over every living thing that moves. You know why a 150-pound man can control a 22,000-pound elephant? Because that's how God set it up at the very beginning. Now, if you're an evolutionist, you're going to have a problem with that. If you think that humans evolved from primates, you're going to have a real problem with humans being the subduers and the dominion havers, only weighing 150 pounds, not having any kind of spikes, and not having really very sharp teeth. I mean, you might argue if you've ever gotten bit by your four-year-old, but generally speaking, they're not all that sharp. How is that that humans control the earth? That's how God set it up. Because we didn't evolve over millions of years. That's how it was established at the very beginning. And that's why the idea of humans living with dinosaurs doesn't pose a problem at all. For every kind of beast, of bird, of reptile, of creature of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind. Now, I always think this is a great picture right here. Look at the head on that bear right there. You find the bones of a bear with claws that are 6 inches long and a head that is massive. It's got razor sharp teeth. And somebody says, hey, would you dance in a ring with a bear like that? And you say, no. But people do it on a regular basis for entertainment. There's your cobra. I have always threatened to take the seal off of here. He's just not quite as vicious as all these other creatures. But he somehow gets left on there. Now here's the next question. What's the Bible got to say about dinosaurs? And that's a real good question. If I were to ask you, please pick up your Bibles and turn in them to the passage or the verse that uses the word dinosaur. Take you a while to find that, wouldn't you? Oh, get on your little smartphones and type that in. See what happens. You're not going to come up with anything. Why is that? Well, think through that. When did we say the word dinosaur was invented? 1841. When was the Bible written? Well, if you want to know when it was written, you're talking about 1450 B.C. Moses started penning the first books, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, in Hebrew. And then subsequently got to about 400 B.C. where Malachi was finished. And then you get the New Testament coming along in about, between 50 and 100 A.D. So you got a period of 1600 years. And what was the New Testament written in? Greek. And the English word dinosaur didn't come on the scene until 1841. You know, your New King James, your King James translation, rather, was translated in what year originally? 1611? So the word dinosaur wasn't even around when King James's crew decided that they were going to translate the Bible into English. So if you've got a creature in the Bible that is a dinosaur, guess what it's not going to be called? Dinosaur, because the word wasn't even around when the Bible was written. That's one thing to consider. Now let me ask you this. Turn in the Bible to the place where you read about koala bears. Go ahead. And just when you get it, read it for me. You never read about koala bears, do you? Okay, I'm sorry about kangaroos. Duck-billed platypuses? Hippopotami? Oh, you don't read. Well, that must mean God didn't create those creatures. You ever think like that? No, you don't. Because there's some very clear verses that talk about what went on in creation. If the Bible says that God created all land-living animals on day six, and a dinosaur is a land-living animal, then does the Bible talk about dinosaurs? Yes. Indirectly, it certainly does. Just like it talks about kangaroos and koala bears and killer whales and blue whales and anything else you want to throw out there. If the Bible mentions a category and an animal falls into that category, then the Bible actually is mentioning that particular animal. You look in Exodus 20:11. In 6 days, the Lord made the heavens, the earth, the sea, and all that is in them. What does all that is in them include? Everything. Dinosaurs, everything. But you don't really have to stop right there. That's not all we've got. We've got something else that I think is something to consider. Job chapter 40, verse 15. Now, before you read this, stick with me just for a second. Job is not happy with the way things have gone in his life. He was the greatest of all the men in the East, and somehow, all of a sudden, he's lost everything. He lost 10 kids. He lost thousands and thousands of head of livestock. He's got boils all over his body, and his four friends that come to supposedly comfort him are explaining to him that the reason that he is dying and that he is sick and that he needs to curse God and die is because he's a worse sinner than anybody else on the face of the earth. And Job is looking at him and his friends thinking, I haven't done anything worse than you. I'm not saying I'm perfect, but I am saying I'm just as good as you are. And I hadn't been sleeping with any of my maids. I hadn't been murdering anybody. I hadn't been stealing money from any of my workers. I know that I'm not wicked enough to deserve what I'm going through. And so I want to talk to God. And here's the problem. Job says, I know that if I talk to God, he's going to be so glorious that when he shows up, he's going to kill me just by his presence. If a human ever saw God, just the mere fact of looking at him would kill him. But I'll tell you what. If God will come down and talk to me and he won't kill me with his presence, I think I'm going to convince him that I'm not getting treated fairly. So God, in an almost unprecedented interchange, says, all right, Job, let's talk. Where were you when I hung the foundations of the world on nothing? Where were you when I established justice and I make sure justice gets done all over the globe of the earth? Job, can you feed all of the animals? Job, can you cause the day to be formed? Can you make a day? Think about that for a second. How you make a day? Well, Job is sitting there listening to these questions and he's realizing, oh, hold on just a second, I messed up. No, I can't hang the world on nothing. No, I can't feed all the animals. I did good to feed the livestock that I had, and that was with the help of a lot of servants. No, I can't make a day. And then God gets to Job 40, where he says, now, Job, look at the behemoth that I made along with you. You know, I'm convinced that there's not a single word, not a syllable in the Bible that's there on accident. Why do you think God said he made the behemoth along with Job? What's he saying? Whatever this creature is, I made it at the same time as I made humans. You can look at one and you can get the point. Now the point here is, Job, I'm bigger than you. To prove that, I hung the world on nothing. To prove it, I make days. To prove it, I feed all the animals. And to prove it, I want you to look at the behemoth that I made along with you. Now most of the time when you go into another language and you see a word that needs translating, you bring it over. For instance, if you go into Spanish and they use the word perro. Now they can roll their R, I cannot. And so, you use the word perro, that means dog. Now, does the word perro sound anything like the word dog? No, but in Spanish, the word perro means dog. That's a translation. Now, a transliteration is when you have a word in one language and you don't have a meaning in another language, and so you just bring the word over and make it sound as close to the original language. So, if we didn't have something for the word dog, we would take perro and we would transliterate it in English, perro. So guess what? In Hebrew, guess what the word here is? Behemoth. Oh, it's behemoth. We didn't have a translation for it. We didn't say, this is what this word means. We transliterated it. In Hebrew, the first sound of this word is buh. The next sound of this word is huh. The next sound of this word is heh. I don't know. Keep going through the sounds. Behemoth. So we transliterate the word because we don't know what it means. And we're going to go to the commentators here. This is the American Standard Version. These are the translator's notes for the American Standard Version. I love the American Standard Version. I do not like all the translator's notes. Here's the translator note. Well, this is supposed to be a hippopotamus or an elephant. Just a quick question. If something else was living on this earth right now that was bigger than an elephant, you think they would have put it on there? Oh, sure. Why did they say hippo or an elephant? It's two biggest land-living creatures you got that eat grass. But there's going to be a problem. And the problem is when you start looking at the description of the behemoth, God said, I made this guy along with you. He eats grass like an ox. His strength's in his hips. His power's in his stomach muscles. He moves his tail like a cedar. When you go to the Bible and you look at the word cedar and how it's used, of the highest branches of the high cedar, whose height was like the height of the cedars, indeed a cedar was a cedar of high stature. The righteous shall grow like a cedar. What picture do you get of the size of a cedar? It's a little bitty switch type. No, it's really big. In fact, so big that the righteous grow up like a cedar. That this guy grew to be like the highest branches of the high cedar. Now, that is a cedar. You got about six guys around the trunk of a cedar. That is what the cedars would have looked like that the Bible readers or listeners would have understood to be God talking about the highest branches of the high cedars. And we got the elephant and the hippopotamus that are supposed to have tails that swing like... You know, if my mom asked me to go out and get a switch and I brought that back, she'd send me back for something bigger. That doesn't look a thing like a cedar, does it? Well, what about the hippo? Now, these two critters got mad at us for using these pictures of them, but they illustrate our point perfectly. You can't use an elephant and a hippo for this description. It doesn't match the description. You got a behemoth. It's an unknown creature that was massive. God was saying, Job, it's so big, I made it at the same time as you, and if you can't make a creature like this, then you certainly can't understand all of my ways. Does this match the description of a behemoth much better? Sure it does. Absolutely, positively, it does. Now, why wouldn't you say the behemoth was a plant-eating dinosaur with a tail that swung like a cedar? Well, because you'd always been taught that no human being ever saw a live dinosaur. And you can't even allow the Bible to explain it further for you. Do you understand what this is saying? What this is saying is that at one time, huge creatures like dinosaurs, most likely a large plant-eating dinosaur, were used by God to show His power. And yet, what are they used for now? They're used to teach kids that they evolved from primordial slime and that there is no God. Well, isn't it time we took dinosaurs back and started using them for what they were intended to be used for, to show the awesome power of God? Now, I'm going to have to skip through here. You would love this stuff, but it's almost 5 o'clock, and you can read about it in our books in the back. We are going to hit this. Where did the dinosaurs go? You know, we're told 65 million years ago, a huge meteor about 6 miles wide slammed into the Yucatan Peninsula, caused all kinds of earthquakes and volcanoes and fires, and all the soot caused the environment of the atmosphere to be such that the sun couldn't get through, and all the plants died, and the plants that were feeding the dinosaurs, because they were dead, the dinosaurs died themselves. You got some problems with that. Problem number one is, in the strata where they say this 65 million year old extinction occurred, they go 300,000, which these dates are crazy, but they're not scientifically valid, but they go up in the strata 300,000 years later and they still find dinosaur bones. Well, what, you had something that occurred and then 300,000 years later you still had dinosaurs, but you said they went extinct at the time that the meteorite hit the earth? Well, that doesn't make any sense. And secondly, land-living turtles, were they supposed to be around at the same time as dinosaurs? Supposed to be. You still got them? Sharks, supposed to be around the same time as dinosaurs? Yeah, still got them. Crocodiles, alligators, those all supposed to be around the same time as dinosaurs? Yeah, and you still got them. How is it that it killed all the dinosaurs, but it didn't happen to kill those creatures? Well, there's a better explanation. The better explanation is simply this. We went to the Dinosaur National Monument, one of the largest dinosaur fossil graveyards in the world. You go into it, you see these fossils all on the wall. There's about 1,600 of them. On the other side of the building, you see a mural that explains why they think these fossils were buried in this particular area, and they explain to you that after a seasonal flood, this scene of 145 million years ago is based on clues found on the rock surface behind you, carcasses brought downstream by fast-moving muddy water. How'd these dinosaurs get fossilized? Fast-moving? Muddy water. You know that's what you got to have to make fossils, don't you? I mean, you hit a possum on the side of the road, is it going to fossilize? No, your buzzards are going to eat it, and your dogs are going to drag it off, and your bugs are going to get in it, and it's going to decompose. You're never going to have a fossil. How do you get fossils? Something dies, and it gets buried really quickly, and a lot of water runs through it, so it replaces all the stuff with silica, and there's a lot of pressure on top of it. Do you know, if you go and start looking at how they explain virtually every single dinosaur graveyard, guess what they say? A flash flood, a local flood, a regional flood, a seasonal flood, a flood, 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 flood. Where are you going to get a flood that's going to bury literally hundreds or thousands of tons of dinosaurs? Oh, hey, guess what? We got one of those, don't we? Makes perfect sense. Noah's flood. That's the best explanation for where most all of the dinosaur fossils that you ever see came from. But you say, hold on just a second. Wait just a second. If most of the dinosaurs died in the flood, but the Anasazi Indians were carving dinosaurs between 500 and 1500 AD, that means some of the dinosaurs had to be on the ark, didn't they? I mean, picture that. Ham, your turn to feed the T-Rex. I did it yesterday. Got a bandage all over his arm, Shamda. You going to put two Argentinosauruses on the ark? I mean, those guys were 116 tons weight, 126 feet long. How in the world are you going to... Oh, guess what? You know what? There's a solution to that, isn't there? The other day I saw a picture of a 24-foot-long crocodile that weighed 2,000 pounds. little guy, looked like he was about 5'5", was standing behind him in the Philippines. They caught this guy alive, and they were going to make a little zoo out of him, and he was going to be the main character. Go figure why he was going to be the main character. Massive, 24 feet long. 24 feet long, that's 8 yards. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. That's from that end of that pew to here. That's how long from tip to tail this particular crocodile was, and he weighed 2,000 pounds. How big did he start when he hatched out of an egg? 6 inches, figure? He went from 6 inches to 2,000 pounds and 24 feet long? Yeah, sure he did. What could Noah have taken on the ark to save space? Oh, yeah. You guys are a step ahead of us here. Take you some young dinosaurs. Do you ever read where God says, "No, I want you to go find the biggest Argentinosaurus"? Of course, he wouldn't have been called an Argentinosaurus. He might have, what, Nodosaurus that you've ever seen. And you don't read that, do you? Could Noah have taken young dinosaurs? What would that have done? Cut down on food that he would have had to take him? Cut down on room? Cut down on all kinds of problems? Makes perfect sense. You know the biggest dinosaur egg that we've ever found has been about 24. Now, yeah, I'm trying to get the aerial. 24 inches long is the biggest dinosaur egg we've ever found. Do dinosaurs fit perfectly in the construction of biblical creation? Is there a scientific problem with anything that's ever been said or done factually between a dinosaur and the Bible? No. Now you're going to hear, millions and millions of years, it's based on dating methods that are not accurate, and everything we know to be a fact meshes perfectly with what the Bible says about creation. And it's time, as I said, we take dinosaurs back and we start using them to teach about God's power instead of letting other people use them to teach that we evolved from primordial slime. Now, let me give you a quick example of how I think that works. This is our book, Dinosaurs Unleashed. Like I said, we put this out, and this has been our number one best-selling, most widely distributed dinosaur, any book that we've got. The reason for that is because dinosaurs sell stuff. Now, this has all of the information that we discussed on about a third through sixth grade level. You're looking at 7 years old to about 9 years old. We've got an adult book out there called Dinosaur Delusion that has it all in very in-depth documented form. If you want to know the scientific journal where that soft tissue was found, you go to Dinosaur Delusion. It's got all the in-depth scientific documentation for everything that we've shown today. There was a kid who came to one of our seminars in the first grade, sat through the seminar, listened, got this book, The Dinosaurs Unleashed. Read it in first grade. Now, he was ahead of his grade level, reading, as far as that went. He went to school, I think it might have been later that same year. And his parents wrote us this email. His teacher was named Miss Madison, and his name was Jeremy. And they said, here's what happened to Jeremy in class today, or whenever it was. Said Jeremy was asked to read a section about dinosaurs. And being one of the smarter kids in the class, he could read well. He read the paragraph about dinosaurs, being millions of years old, being separated from humans. And he stopped after he read it in the first grade and said, Miss Madison, that's not right. And Miss Madison said, Jeremy, I think you're right. I don't believe it either. And the parents said that the rest of the class agreed with Jeremy and they didn't think it was right either. Now, how does that scenario play out when Jeremy doesn't say that? He reads it, nothing is said, they go on with the story, and every one of those first graders gets one more little piece of humans and dinosaurs didn't live together. Humans and dinosaurs didn't live together. But we could be the ones to empower young people like Jeremy to literally change the course of the education that gets done in their environment when they kindly and firmly say, Miss Madison, that's not right. Let's make sure we're doing everything we can do to be the force of influence in our sphere of influence to make sure something changes. You guys are gluttons for punishment because you've been sitting here for, I don't know, you're looking at 4.5 hours pretty close. And you have listened the entirety of the time. And I want to thank you so very much. I have been scheduled to speak at places and have shown up, and it'd be a congregation of 150. I've had 12 people. And I've unloaded all this stuff on 12 people. It just is a whole lot more fun when there are a lot more people and they're listening well. And you guys have listened extremely well. And I hope that you have been blessed as much by the presentation as I have by your presence. We're going to have about 10, 15 minutes worth of questions. There's just one real simple rule when it comes to questions. You have to ask questions that I know the answer to. Other than that, you know, that's about it. But generally speaking, this lasts about 5 or 10 minutes. And if you got any kind of question, let me know, and we'll just deal with it. Let me see if I can deal with this one here pretty quick. Assuming you could travel to the end of the universe, what would you find at the end? This does not classify as a question I know the answer to. Sorry. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. Who knows what you would find at the end? That's just a very good question. The universe is so very, very big that nobody's ever even come close to seeing the end of it. At the end of the universe, I don't know. Great question. Let's do some research on that. Who else has got one? See if that's going to be the answers that you're going to get. Sorry. That's all I got. Yes, sir. What you got?
A little bit about carbon dating.
Yes. And the reason that I don't put it